My name's Jen Yuchin.
And I'm Ari Fox.
And we're New Gaming News, a bi-weekly podcast and newsletter focused on the esports and gambling industry.
Parimatch enters into the Esports Integrity Commission. They joined the commission to assist with battling fraud and cheating in esports, and have already worked with anti-match-fixing organization FederBet. Parimatch offers esports betting markets for users in Europe and the CIS region, sponsors teams such as Virtus Pro and Team Spirit, and has launched its own events like Parimatch League for Dota 2. So it's just good to see that more companies are offering like their data and partnering up with the Esports Integrity Commission and all types of groups like that, just to kind of make sure that everything is okay. There's no match fixing, nothing shady going on. Just to
I think I also read in this article about the protection of the players and players' rights are being covered in this, which I thought was it's something. Listen, individually, I think in the industry in esports at this point, there's a lot of lawyers that are representing a lot of players and writing a lot of contracts, but there's really no overall standard. I think it'll come. It'll be a coverage of sort of like a players union kind of thing that they have in baseball and other places. Mm-hmm. But I think it was either this article or another article, but I think that, in order to protect the rights of players, there has to be something in place that I think is going to help, their rights and how long their contracts are for.
Yeah.
And, how many hours are they supposed to, put in per week, and something standard in that and all of that, because to be a pro player, it's hours upon hours upon hours of just constantly studying the game.
Extraordinarily taxing.
And very taxing. And, you have to be so passionate about what you do, just like you have to be passionate about all the other sports if people professionally play them. But in this particular case, I think it's a little harder. I think, I don't know. Because I've never had anyone that I know of that's a professional athlete. But from a professional athlete's perspective, to play softball or to play baseball, or to play one of those games at the high school levels or college levels, you're really maybe you put in an hour of practice every or 2 hours of practice after school
every day
or something like that every day. Where in this particular case, it's like 6 hours.
Yeah.
A day. And that's like, because it's so, you really, it's also based on quickness of thought and strategy. And I actually think esports is way harder than conventional sports.
To be honest with you. Do you think that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I think 10 years from now, 20 years from now, people are going to look back and there are going to be humans that will be able to play video games that are like a million times better than the players today. Because there's going to be all this study on it's how they improve the players and the players play, and there's science on all of this, and this is what happens in with professional athletes. They they build this part of the muscle or that part of muscle, and yeah. This is what they do with I think eventually it's going to be something in esports too. But it's hard for people to wrap their brains around it. And that's why there's so many people that make that comparison to conventional sports, that it's just like the NFL or football when you get to the pro levels. And I'm still in the same camp, and I've always said this, that it's not comparable. It's a very different animal altogether. It has similarities, and the similarities have to do with the dedication, the passion, like anything else, of the player itself.
Yeah, just a competitive nature, yeah.
Right, but I mean, there's no way to really connect the two and say and compare them, because I think one's completely different, and then the fan bases are very different too. It's not, I think it might get there eventually, but I just think that it's just a, you know, it's an evolution of what is to come.
I think 100% it's an evolution. I agree with that.
So, but we'll see. But yeah, no, that's an interesting article. I know that Ian Smith is doing an amazing job with ESIC.
Mm.
And, you know, of any organization, and there are a lot of organizations. There's, you know, there's organizations based in the World Esports Coalition, or one of them. There's a couple of them in Europe. And you'll see more pop up. But the one that I feel is that's going to make it to the finish line is the one that Ian's running, because he did it before. I think Ian Smith represented organizations in cricket and other things in Europe.
So he's familiar. And,
right. He's familiar. He has
with what needs to be regulated.
Right. So he's pretty good on that stuff. Mm. And he's a lawyer, so that doesn't hurt.
Yeah, you have to have the mind for that and like really read between the lines and read the fine print and see what's actually going on.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing because I was on before this call, I was talking to the dean of UNLV, you know, in Las Vegas, who was head of what they call the Blackfire Institute.
Mm.
Blackfire Institute is like this, a new part of the school that opened that is moving into the support of creating people to service the esport ecosystem. So it's everything from hospitality to streaming to broadcasting to, you know, the back end of, you know, communications, journalism, you know, the actual players themselves, you know, exercise routines, you know, mental stimulation, psychology behind esport competitions and players, understanding the games. So it's like everything you would need to, if you wanted to get into esports and you wanted to, this is not a plug for UNLV, by the way, but if you ever wanted to get into esports, they have a really great program that they're making there that is really, at this point, will be the one place if you're trying to get involved into esports, or even gaming or video gaming for that matter. They're really creating an amazing program there, which I think it's going to be copied by a lot of other colleges. Once those other colleges put their name on it, like, you know, Harvard has their esport program, then it's going to be, oh, well, you went to the Harvard esport program.
Yeah,
so.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So, but, you know, UNLV is really heads and shoulders above the rest at this point because they really got a jump start on it.
They're already putting in the time and the work.
Yeah, they're getting, you know, they have a lot of professors involved in it. They're really moving it along. You know, and they're still learning as the ecosystem grows. They're still developing, but a lot of other colleges are also instituting a lot of curriculum for their schools as well.
Yeah.
I think the West Coast in general is a little bit more advanced than the East Coast, so. And, you know, you guys are working on curriculum, and that's great, and it's important, you know, because the only way to build an ecosystem is to, you know, have the people who are going to teach it.
And educate them.
Yeah, to educate the younger people who want to get involved.
So many people right now are going into it just out of pure talent, passion, etc., and there's really no how to go about anything. It's the Wild West, as has
exactly
been said so many different times.
But that's exactly
why. And that's
why
so many issues are happening.
Yeah, that's why it is the Wild West. Because everyone knows these people are just starting it from nothing, and there's all this investment money pouring in, and the people are just sort of like, you know, walking around in the dark, not knowing exactly which direction to move in. So,
well, speaking of being in the dark, I know we're always kind of talking about, like, viewership metrics.
Right.
And how it's really hard to actually tell who's watching what for how long and what they're actually tracking. So Riot Games and Nielsen are implementing a Live Plus metric for the LCS, which is for, obviously, League of Legends. And they're expanding its partnership deal with the data and measurement firm Nielsen to implement a new viewership system for the LCS. They're developing, it's the first broadcast metric labeled Live Plus and Live Plus ratings. Pretty much they're adding like VODs and things like that. They're actually tracking them as separate, but adding them to the total viewership. And the reason that they're doing this is really so that you can give a more accurate representation for your sponsors of who's going to see what. And yeah, it does make a difference if it's on VODs, which is video on demand, or live. It does make a difference when someone's watching something. And I think it's a nice step to the future of actually tracking that kind of thing and differentiating it and like being more honest.
You know, I always look at Riot Games and I look at them and say it's a publishing company that can do no wrong.
Yeah, they've really been killing it.
And Blizzard is the complete opposite.
I know.
It's sort of like they're, you know, it's like that, you know, it's that, you know, this, it's the one, you know, what happened there, we don't know. You know what I mean? It's they went in the, they're going in the opposite direction, and all their moves they can never do right. Blizzard.
There's so many game companies. Obviously Blizzard is so big, but there's so many game companies that are really effing it up and like charging too much for things and just trying to take advantage of everybody.
I mean I was recently, I think it was this past weekend or it was last week or something, they had another Call of Duty tournament. You know, I mean, Blizzard did that.
Huh.
Blizzard Activision. And I'm telling you, what they were thinking, I have no idea, but they did take shots of the crowd.
Mm.
There were probably at most 100, maybe a couple hundred people there. It was probably the saddest, this is supposed to be a professional level, you know, Call of Duty League. And it's really not turning in any numbers that could be considered impressive, although they did get 90,000 viewers, which is nothing to say, you know, that wasn't good. But,
yeah.
I mean, they also went to a period of time during the tournament where the screen just went blank.
Interesting.
And they were like, we'll be right back. I mean, you couldn't fill that spot with some
anything
kind of interview
else.
Or something else.
They had nothing on deck.
I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean, that's
yeah.
Just
they had a lot of issues in their opening weekend, and I guess in the following weekend as well.
Their viewership would drop from 90,000 to 30,000. Because
big drop.
You know,
I watched that on VOD. I didn't watch it live. I watched it later each match.
Right. But I mean, you know, I mean, of all the games, I mean, Call of Duty is not the most exciting. But, I mean, it's great. It's a good game. But
I disagree personally. I think it's about taste.
Yeah, I also think so, too. I mean, I honestly, personally.
Because I almost think that
Call of Duty is more exciting
than, like, Overwatch.
I find, I don't know, for some reason CSGO seems to be a little more exciting.
And League of Legends, no offense, is a little boring. Like, I only watch, I fast forward to, like, the last 15 minutes of the match.
Yeah. And you like Overwatch better, though.
Yeah, I do, but it's even more boring than Call of Duty League. Call of Duty League got me into the game. But they aren't doing a very good job with what they're doing. It's okay. They're getting traction, but they have a lot of uh-ohs. And for something as big as it is, it shouldn't be that. You're not a rinky-dink, like, tournament. You're supposed to be Call of Duty League. You're supposed to be epic. You're supposed to be huge. You're supposed to be the Disney, like, flawless.
Yeah, you're supposed to be, like, the pro league.
Yeah, seriously, and there was so much hype before it, and
it's like, it's seriously amateur hour.
It was amateur hour, it was cool,
like,
but it was still amateur hour for what it was supposed to be.
I mean, and you're paying all that money.
Yeah.
I mean, all these owners that have paid so much money for these teams, and your production and your delivery of what your content is just garbage.
Not great.
I mean, I don't know.
They didn't even have the stats on screen. They had the kids' faces. I think I said this in the last podcast, but
I know.
They just do weird stuff. I don't know. They don't think.
I think it's almost like maybe in a lot of ways they're trying to be like they want to be like that. Maybe they want to be more like amateur, like, you know, like famous streamers that just stream from their bedroom all the time.
That's what they want to feel like.
Yeah. So making it so like, you know, the word, they used to use a word called campy. You know, like
yeah.
just just like kind of grungy, not exactly polished.
Maybe.
I don't know. I have no
maybe
idea.
Maybe they are trying to be more like that, but I feel like they're not. I feel like it's not purposefully campy.
Yeah, but I can't figure that for the life of me. But I got to tell you that I think Riot, and you know, compare, it's like the yin and the yang. I mean,
yeah.
Riot is just one of those publishing companies that is doing everything right. They're trying, you know, connecting with Nielsen, and we talked about here. I mean, Nielsen, it's funny because, you know, I always say it, and I said this before, I don't like when they compare professional sports to regular sports.
Yeah, you do say
but
that.
But there is a lot to be learned from people that understand a structure of something that existed before there was this ecosystem that's evolving. And what I mean by that, that's why I find it, you know, that's why I find guys like Ian Smith from ESIC as someone who, he's an older person that's been around a while, has a lot of experience, business acumen, understands the rights of players. So there's already a seasoned, it might not be with esports, but it's already a someone who has a seasoned idea of what they want to do. And that's another problem I have with the esport ecosystem is there, you know, it's like people think if you're going to get involved in esports that you need to be a gamer on the business side. And honestly, I think that's more of a problem than it is a solution. Because when you're so close to the product, you're not looking at it from a business perspective. So in regard to like the Wild West, they're just going to go in a direction. So like an investor gives this guy a lot of money. He's a gamer. He started some, you know, I don't know. He started some, you know, esports team.
Yeah.
Guy who's running it is an esport. You know, he played. He was a gamer himself. And now he wants to run an esports team. And he's, you know, the CEO of whatever team it is. I don't know. But that CEO, that guy who's now in charge and he's going to be calling the shots, in what planet does he understand business?
Yeah. That's the whole point with like setting up these programs as well, because even if you do have like the raw talent or the passion or whatever, you still might not have the skills necessary, and then you drown. Or you
right.
either sink or swim. I don't say you drown, you sink or swim.
Well, because it's almost like a situation where you're thinking, oh my God, okay, so this guy's a gamer. He loves video gaming. He's so great at it. All right, well, all right, now he gets investors for his team. Here's $20 million. Okay, sure, I'm going to get a house. I think I'll just buy a brand new car that's like, you know, cost me, you know, $200,000. I'm going to get all this stuff for my players. I'm going to give my players enormous salaries because I struggled as a gamer, and now I want my players to, like, you know, now we're considered a professional team because we have – no, excuse me. There's something called a balance sheet. So if you – and they teach you about that in business school. And the truth is, if you don't know what that is, then you really shouldn't be the CEO. You know, you could be the coach. You could be the manager and understand the players, but – to be the guy in charge that's calling the shots and saying what the budget is for all your team, for the entire team, I don't think that's somebody that you should, you know. And that, more times than not, you'll find that across the board, that a lot of the people that are, like, you know, in these executive positions are basically gamers or were gamers, and now they're calling shots as business people. And that's one of the reasons why there's been a real problem in the return on investment with investors. So I think that's going to change too. You'll find a lot more, you know, people in gaming, since they had their shot, people in esports that have had their shot, they've gotten that opportunity to run a team.
And yeah, I think we're already seeing it. I don't have any examples off the cuff, but I know I wish I remember right now, but there's a player who recently just like became part owner of a team that he was on, and I can't remember who at the moment.
Well, they, you know what it is the gamers at some
it just
point
happened.
Go, well, they just throw their hands up and they go, I don't know anything about business, so I'm going to hire someone that knows how to do, you know, run a business.
Yeah.
And that's eventually what, you know, you'll see more and more of that. And that's important because, you know, you have to have people who, and usually, you know, sometimes it's not a dumb idea to get someone who's been around a while. I'm talking about an older person.
Yeah, well, everybody talks about authenticity, but that does bring the authenticity there. It's like you already know they're part of the scene. They love it. They live it. They breathe it. They might not have business savvy 100%, but they're a good person to have around to
Yeah.
make good judgment calls for the brand.
Right. If you're talking branding, marketing, I mean, of course, a gamer's going to understand what gamers want. There's no doubt about it. But when it comes down to allocating money, dealing with the investor's
Hire
money,
someone.
and doing it smart, I think you need someone who has a master's in business,
Agreed.
at least, or at least went and, had some kind of business classes and as while they were in college. I mean, that's just my personal opinion. I don't think, so you'll see more and more of that. And, like I said, you brought up the A word, the authenticity word.
The A word.
There's just so much of the opposite happening. So
100.
investors giving money to gamers that are running teams, and those gamers who are now the CEOs are, making up bullshit, bullshit spreadsheets to show that they're earning monies or they're doing this or doing that, and they're not letting the ship float properly. And instead, they're running around plugging holes, because there's so many issues that's happening, and they don't know really how to allocate money, how to work the investment dollars. That to me is not being authentic. That saying, bringing in investment dollars and allocating it and not knowing what you're doing, and saying, yeah, oh, thank you very much for your $20 million. We're gonna have this off the hook team, and we're going to win every match, and we're going to make our money back by winning tournaments and selling merchandise. In my opinion, I don't think you're being authentic to your investors. If you find and you structure your business with people who have background in business, I believe that's being more authentic, because now you're saying, I got somebody who's going to know what to do and how to run it properly. And there are definitely exceptions to this rule. I think Steven Archinette from Team Liquid, is it Team Liquid? Yeah, I think he's Team Liquid. And Cloud9, these are different, orgs that definitely have it down right. And they are guys that were gamers, but they have good business acumen. So you could be a gamer and passionate about gaming, but you're not necessarily always going to be a gamer and have good business acumen. It's the luck of the draw. You might have it naturally, or you might not. And a lot of them don't have it naturally, but some of them do. And that's the ones that are surviving, because they just have a good idea of what they want to do business-wise. So, anyway, so we're going on to, these land centers are being set up.
Well, I was gonna skip that and segue into the Marvel partnership,
Oh, yeah,
but
that was interesting.
we can because you were talking about Team Liquid, and Team Liquid also has a Marvel partnership. But this particular one is Chiefs Esports Club, which I'm not honestly familiar with. They're in Australia. They're entering
Right.
a 2-year partnership with Marvel, which I feel like is like bizarre. And we're talking about like partnerships and investments that don't like really make sense. Apparently they're just like Marvel is like lending brand assets to Chiefs Esports Club in like apparel and things like that.
That is kind of weird, but I
It's
mean,
bizarre, and they're not.
what about but what but what about the but what you know what and what, let me ask you this question. This one, does Chiefs Esports have a Capcom Marvel team? Marvel team? I don't, probably not.
Good
But there
question. I'm
is,
gonna look it up.
I mean, the article says much like the partnership between Team Liquid and Marvel,
Yeah.
so
Which I
Team
didn't
Liquid
even know
also
they
partnered.
had that.
Yeah,
And Team
I
Liquid
don't.
is like, I follow them on Instagram. Like, I don't see anything about Marvel.
You know what? It's listen. Everybody in Hollywood is trying to stay relevant with their current, with the younger generation.
Yeah.
And I could tell you how. I mean, we have someone speaking at our event from Paramount Pictures, actually.
Nice.
They call him the futurist, and It's not just about esports that the Hollywood are looking at. They don't really understand esports. I mean, it's not that it's that difficult to understand. I don't think that they see a certain value in it because they're coming from a different place. It's like actual professional sports, NFL, NBA. They see the value in it because it's a competitive landscape. And again, I'm not comparing the two, I'm not comparing conventional to esports, but they see the value in esports. Mm. Now, Hollywood comes from another place. Hollywood comes from sheer entertainment. It's the evolution of Broadway to the actual, screen. So they're looking at something and saying, okay, well, we need to understand this younger generation as well. So the conventional sports world is saying, I need to understand this younger generation. So we're going to adapt NBA 2K to the NBA and sort of make these different things and put New England Patriot jerseys on Fortnite characters and all that kind of stuff. You know, have different skins. So that
I think the cross branding is smart.
The cross branding is smart. So I think what you're seeing though is attempts by Hollywood to cross brand into the teams because they see the teams have a following, they see the teams have players, and they're trying to capture a younger audience. But they're going beyond that. In fact, the guy who's coming to my event in June. The CEC is going to be speaking about mixed reality, so AR, VR, and he actually believes that in the future, esports is not just going to be, playing at consoles, but it's going to be a mix of virtual gaming and actual athleticism.
That makes sense.
So, you'll be moving your body as well as using your mind and working in a virtual world. So, think of something where, you're having, they already have it. I showed you that UFL. Did you ever saw that UFL sandbox VR game that was like sword fighting in an arena?
Yeah.
Body armor. So that's already moving in that direction. Plus, Psyonix Games, I think that created Rocket League is working on something. So, and even some people have even taken Rocket League, that game, and made it as a VR game, and they sit in simulators, car simulators. So you play Rocket League in a car simulated VR experience.
I think you brought this up last podcast.
Right. So this is an evolution of, it's like esports will always be esports, but there's now they're bringing in something else besides that, which is the physical aspect of it, which makes it even more difficult. I mean, it's like now you're talking, athleticism as well, which, I mean, I guess it's probably because, they've seen real guys that have been athletes, professional athletes, playing video games and them getting really into it. So maybe there's a passion that crosses both. So that's a whole nother.
Yeah. Cause it hits their competitive niche, but obviously like if you're retired or injured or X or Y or Z, it's a good place for you to channel that competitive nature.
Right. So now you're really talking about, another division of esports as it evolves. And that's video game, electronic, crossover between the mind and the body.
Yeah.
And that's it's fascinating what's going to happen. And then there's other games I've seen, that you're throwing a disc at somebody and you have to shatter them in the VR. There's some wild stuff.
Yeah.
That I've seen coming out, but it's definitely all going to happen. And I see that Marvel is going, I was just going up, but Marvel Entertainment is just trying to hold on to and find anything that they possibly can get their hands on that I think is going to not let people forget about Spider-Man.
Yeah, honestly. Let's push forward into the esports facilities, then we could skip the Dota Pro Circuit.
Yeah.
Pretty much they're just changing up their format, and it's interesting, so anybody can go look that up. But Simplicity Esports, they're securing new franchise territories. It says that they cover Oxford, Corpus Christi, and McAllen. Their sales are a continuation of a strategy that the company sees turning around its existing facilities into a more computer-centric atmosphere alongside providing consoles to its customers. And back in 2019, they entered a definitive agreement to acquire PlayLive Nation, which gave them 44 game centers across the United States. Rebranded for Simplicity Esports. And then by the end of 2020, the sale of these franchise expands our presence in Texas and Mississippi, and they want to bring meaningful experiences.
And then they would be rebranded Simplicity Esports. But, you know, what I find, you know, it's amazing. The whole video gaming world and gaming in general is really growing, and it's like, If you went back 10 years, it's just an evolution of, you know, constant entertainment stimuli.
Yeah.
To it, and it just keeps growing and getting more intense. And, you know, I never thought that esport arenas or LAN centers were exactly a great business model.
Yeah, as you said.
But, I mean, if you got a LAN center in a college area, you know, it's great for your esports team to play. And it's also great for people to gather. You know, and if you add the other aspects of, like, you know, for an older audience, like, you know, if you have a bar or a pizza place or something and connect all the elements, it can work in some ways. But
there is something very isolating about LAN centers, though. Even as a gamer myself, like, I have my own PC. I like playing games. I don't know that going to a LAN center is my ultimate social fun experience because you're just playing by yourself.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's also the truth. I mean, I think when people go out as millennials, younger people, they want to socialize.
Yeah, I think, like, so, you're always talking about putting, like fighting game machines and stuff like that and betting on that. Not that betting's involved in these LAN centers, but I feel like the new school arcade is what's needed above, like, these gaming centers.
Yes. Yeah, this is, I'm not sure about this business model, honestly. I mean, they're just trying.
It's very isolating.
Yeah, it is isolating. And I think it's just a stab at a company trying to, you know, I think a little bit about Jed Kaplan. I did a little research on him. He's an investment guy. He's coming from the investment side. So I think that, you know, maybe he doesn't understand esports as well as he should. You know, and this is a constant, I think it's a constant mistake by investment banking. And I've seen this a couple times, actually more than that. But I did read the Goldman Sachs, they did an esport evaluation report. It was 59 pages. And it was put out by Goldman Sachs, yeah. You know, for all these other investing companies. And honestly, all the stuff in there, I think they were all, by the time the report came out, things have changed so rapidly that some of the stuff in there wasn't even relevant. So it was like, you know, stuff changes so quickly in the esport ecosystem that what I saw in that. I mean, 86% of it I already knew, but, like, and a lot of the stuff was already stuff that, you know, was commonplace. But before that actual report came out, a lot of other investors were doing their own analysis. And I think some of these guys have gotten it wrong.
Yeah.
I think a lot of them are. And they're not doing their due diligence. They got to get into it. You got to play, you know, some games. You got to go and talk to the people on the streets. Go to PAX and talk to the people walking around. Get some information. Just, you know, from the word on the street, not just from some high tower guy in his white tower just doing an analysis based on research. Like, there's nothing wrong with research, but my point is that the ecosystem is not old enough to even do enough research on it.
Yeah. No, you're so right. And I think that's really, really wise advice.
Yeah.
And it seems, I mean, like, as you're saying it seems kind of obvious. but it's obviously not, not happening.
No, it's not, because people just, it's like, you know, gold rush, and they feel they need to be the first to market. Now, listen, there's an abundance, and esports is going to grow in many different ways. But because a lot of these guys that are these banking investors looked at esports and they go, oh, my God, it's a new sport like football. It's a new sport like baseball. Not really understanding it for its own creation, its own, you know, thing. It's like when the internet came out and it was, you know, and the dot-com craze. Nobody knew what the internet was.
Yeah.
I mean, people were like, well, I'm never going to read the newspaper online, you know, but we get all our news. From
it's
our
even people who hate on things like TikTok.
Yeah. I mean, we get all our news from the phone and the
so
computer.
Funny, so funny. Yeah.
But nobody understood what it was. So what were people doing in those days? And I could tell you that there were people, investors, taking hordes of money and throwing it at the most ridiculous things that you could buy online. Like buy, you know, 3 pieces of toilet paper online. It was the dumbest thing. Anything that had a .com after it, everyone was invested. All the investors were throwing money at it.
Yeah.
So any Joe Blow could create a .com and not even have the website up yet, but have some crazy idea that they were going to sell, I don't know, you know, toothpicks, something random. And someone would be like, oh, that's a great idea. And they would throw money at it. And the guy would just get tons of money. And the company, of course, would go bankrupt in, you know, like in 6 months or a year. And the guy who started it kept all the money and, you know, bought a house somewhere in the mountains of Colorado. I actually met somebody who did create one of those goofy .com websites and made millions at it. And he does have a house in Colorado.
Yeah.
In Denver. So it's just that ridiculous. And you'd think that people who have all this money would do their due diligence and research. Now the smart investors are waiting until it matures. And that's the way they should do it. If they're not going to go down and talk to the Joe, you know, Joe on the street and really get involved and go to a PAX convention or go to a DreamHack or go to a GameCon and speak to a game developer.
Yeah.
You know, if they're not going to do any of that, then and not educate yourself from a real life experience, and you want to wait for reports, then you should wait until see what happens, until the bubble pops and everything settles.
I think eventually it'll be too late and it might be like overpriced.
Well, that's what they
think. Do you think it's overpriced now?
Oh, that's the problem. It's overpriced now. I mean, no, I think, you know, listen, companies like Activision Blizzard that are selling $20 million franchises for their teams, it's over-evaluated. The evaluations are way, way, way off. It's not at that point. We're creating an ecosystem for a consumer that's not ready for that ecosystem. So what I'm saying is that there's all this money being dumped for esports stadiums and arenas and teams and merchandising and all the stuff, and it's coming out faster than the consumer can consume it. The consumer side of it isn't big enough yet. It's not wide enough yet. It's not accepted enough yet.
Yeah,
it will get there, but it's like you're putting the cart before the horse rather than letting the horse run the cart, and that's a real problem. And I think investors aren't looking at it from that perspective. So there will be a bubble. It will pop. But there will be all solid esport ecosystems that develop. Perfect example. What's happening now on the college levels is by far the best thing that could ever happen to esports. By far. I think 3 or 4 years ago, I was thinking to myself, well, how are they going to get professional players to the at the professional levels? And I was thinking to myself, are there going to be minor leagues, or going to be like in baseball? They come from the colleges? You know what? It's coming from the colleges, coming from the high schools and the colleges, from like little league programs and camps, you know, that like you guys do, which is great. And that's where it's coming from. That's where it starts. That's how you build it. It's the young that come up. So what will last? What will last is solid, good business acumen. Teams like Cloud9, teams like Team, you know, Team Liquid. And I can compare them to the dot-coms that have stuck around from dot-coms. eBay, Amazon.
Yeah, and they're still wildly successful because they're doing all the right things.
Exactly. It's just people who understand their future projections and understand their business and understand business in general and people. You have to understand people. Those are the ones that are going to be around way after the bubble pops. And that's where the investors should be investing their money, in smart people that understand business, not these people that are just, you know, they're no, and no disrespect to people who are gamers that want, they have a passion, they want to create their own team. But if you're going to do that, learn something about business before you go and do it.
I have a closeout question for you that I wrote down before because I was curious on your opinion on it. So what do you think the most beneficial partnership would be between like a casino or a betting brand and an esports brand? Like, what do you think the ideal partnership would be?
The ideal partnership would be, you know, I can only give in reference on what we currently have with like, you know, with casinos, they partner with companies like, you know, William Hill or DraftKings that build their books, their sports books. So the best partnership would be between, I think, an exclusive eSport bookie. And then there were three people. You said the casino, a betting platform, and what was the third?
Oh, it was just betting platforms and casinos. I just, like, stammered.
Yeah, no, I think it's just – I think there's – you know, you really have to – I think to get the real eSport crowds – esport crowds are going to be their own thing, and you're really going to have to. Casinos are going to have to look at the apps that are being developed, and I know a lot of these people that are making and building these companies, apps that are being developed that are exclusively esports, that are not esports and sports.
Yeah,
because people who are passionate about video game competitions, about esports themselves. As I said, it's not, if you throw them in the bucket, in the same bucket as sports.
It's not going to feel as good, and it's not going to feel as real, and we're not going to feel as connected to it.
Yeah, it doesn't feel as good, because it's like, I think people in the video gaming world, sports world, they want to have their own thing. They want, it's got to be their, and you know, you get the crossover of even professional athletes playing esports, or ones that retire investing in esports, and that's okay. But they're looking. They understand once they get involved that esports is its own thing, and we can't. And I think like there are betting apps out there, there are betting companies out there, and then that this is only specifically from a marketing perspective. So let's say a betting platform like Betfred, which is a bookie in London, or even DraftKings. Or FanDuel or any of those. So let's say any of these companies want to build their esports side of it, and they have. They, and then what they've done is they've sort of planted the seed in the same bucket with all of the regular conventional sports. But if they're smart, in 5 years from now, they should just develop an exclusive app for esport betting only, and market it directly to gamers. And they have to understand the gamer society, and they have to understand the gamer mentality in order for them to do that. And that's why a lot of them are coming, a lot of the DraftKings guys and stuff like that, even though they are gamers themselves and they are trying to build their esport division of DraftKings or Betfred or any of these other betting platforms, they're coming to the CEC because they want to make sure that they understand the market right and that they're going to pull the trigger right and push it towards and market it right towards that industry, towards the people and the consumers that would be the ones that would bet on esports.
Yeah.
You got to know your stuff when you're going to, you know, just like if you're passionate about baseball and people who are passionate about baseball want to bet on their team or their player or their pitcher or whatever it is. It's the same thing in esports. And I know I don't compare, but I will compare in this. They are passionate about their players, they're passionate about their teams, they're passionate about the game that they're into in esports. And if the bookies can market themselves properly, they can do it right. They can do it right. But here's the kicker. Esports will do very well in the gambling world.
Yeah.
Because it's like I said, we've been talking.
Yeah, it already has been doing well.
Right, and we've been talking all night about what was developed, and how to sort of change that, change the lexicon, change the discussion for esports only. But we're taking people, and I was saying the most successful esport orgs and stuff like that are people that already know, that have that MBA, that have that business acumen. They may not necessarily be gamers, but they know how to run a business. And that's where you get people like William Hill, like DraftKings, like FanDuel. These are people that have built these enormous companies that are taking bets on professional sports. If they can use their same business acumen, but market it in a different way, and use all the same structures and tools that they were able to use when they built their sports book and do it for esports, then you're really just going to, it'll take off. And that's why I'm saying it's that when you're involving esports with gambling, gambling's already an established ecosystem.
Yes.
By adding esports, which is Wild West, esports can benefit and so can gambling. And I think it's a beautiful match there.
I agree. And that's the new gaming news tea.
That's the new gaming news. Well, you got to take care of your sinus infection.
I know.
So I'll take care of mine. So take some antibiotics.
And everybody else that's on here, don't touch other people because you're going to get the coronavirus. And drink water.
Yeah, drink lots of water. Wash your hands. It's very important. Everybody should wash their hands for at least 10 to 20 seconds. Soap and water. It's the best way to keep yourself healthy.
That's specific.
But everyone say stay healthy, and thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.
See you in 2 weeks.